Yo, what's good, y'all? Y'all know who the fuck it is, man. It's the Dream Team Podcast, man. It's A-Stacks.
10 mil in the building.
Feel me? Yeah, today we got a very special guest today, man. I won't even lie. 10 mil, tell us what we got going on today, man.
Today, we got a chief for y'all. We got the man, the myth, the fucking legend.
The Dream Suave. Himself. Yes, sir.
Yo, what's up, Philly? Y'all already know what it is. Y'all see it?
How you feeling today?
I'm good, man. Good. I'm honored to be here and be your first guest.
It only made sense to make you the first guest. You're the one who gave us the platform.
So real shit. Sure.
It makes sense. So today, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? We're going to joke, we're going to laugh, but we're also going to talk about something that's real serious, incarceration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know what I'm saying? Let me start with the question. We're going to start off slow. First, let me ask you a question. Why did you give us the opportunity to have a podcast?
I mean, the reason I gave y'all the platform, not an opportunity, I mean the platform, because y'all created that opportunity for yourself.
Right.
Y'all was here, y'all wanted it. You know, all I did was share my platform with you, right? But let's keep this 100 for what it is. This y'all did this, not me. I'm just a server, bro. I'm just here to help the brothers and sisters get their voices out. You know, y'all said we want to do this, and I told you whenever y'all ready, y'all came back and y'all ready. And that's why we here. So, you know, I'm not going to take credit for something y'all created, something that y'all wanted. I'm just here to provide a platform for y'all to get out and for your voices to be heard around the world.
Okay. We appreciate that as always, bro.
Yeah, we are so grateful for you to even give us, you gave us the tools. We just took advantage of the opportunity because you already know my story. I wanted, even back in like over the summer, I made goals. One of my goals was to make a podcast, to start my own stuff. I was going to buy my own shit. And so Ace told me about this opportunity. I would have been a fool not to take it. Mm-hmm. So we both want to thank you to the bottom of our hearts and all that for giving us a platform.
I mean, I appreciate it, man, but thank y'all for saying, yo, I want to get put on. Because a lot of times, you know, especially in Philadelphia, we see young black people, they get a bad rap, bro. Bad rap. You know, everybody thinks that young black men in Philadelphia are either robbing and killing. That's not so. That's not the case, man. I come from a community where everybody's black and brown, so we all get labeled the same. So for me to be able to have a podcast network and put people on, people that look like me, people that look like my sons, people that look like my nephews, it's an honor. Because y'all are representation of my people, my family, you know. So to me, it's the right thing to do. Now, what you do with the opportunity is up to y'all. And so far, y'all bringing fire, y'all representing. You know, because what the community don't know, the young people in the community is, you get rich doing podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You get rich. I mean, yo, y'all up to about 1,000 listeners, bro, per hour, listening to y'all. And y'all only got one episode out so far. You know, that's a testament that what you're saying is resonating and connecting with the people in the community.
I didn't even know our numbers was that high, bro.
Yep.
Not gonna lie.
Me too. I ain't know that shit was high, that high too. But you said it. Even before we even released our first episode, you was telling us if we were serious about it, it's gonna be big. And all that. So.
Sky's the limit for y'all, man.
Oh bullshit.
He spoke it to existence and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on, as an individual who's been incarcerated for 31 years.
31 and a half years, bro, and 85 days.
Darn. So, if you don't mind me asking, how old is you?
Me, 54.
That's more than half your life.
More than half of my life.
Now, what's going through your head as the first time? Well, walk us through everything at first, the start, the beginning of all of this.
Yo, the beginning, you know, high school. I'm in high school one day, 1985. Police come. They're looking for me. I duck them, you know, because back in the day, you never say it was you. We used to give police false names, like the name of your shoes. So if you had a pair of Puma, your last name was Puma. So they come to school looking for me. The teachers identify me. I get put in handcuffs. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I ain't do shit. I get down to Afrin Rays. They talking about you being charged with a homicide. I'm like, what? Be mindful, I'm in high school, can't even read, can't even write. And I'm like, why? I can't even spell homicide. So they cuffed me in, they cuffed me up to a chair. You know, the only thing I knew from coming up in the hood was always ask for a lawyer. I said, I want to speak to an attorney. So that was the end of questioning. But they cuffed me up to a chair for about 2 days. Then they refused to let me see my mom, which was illegal. Next thing you know, I'm in the county jail with the grown-ass man. It's like being charged with a full body for something I didn't even do. So I go to trial 2 years later, get found guilty. I get put on death row. Get put on death row. I go to death row, I appeal, they reduce it to life, which is basically the same thing. Life and death row is the same thing. You dying in prison. You know, so I'm wilding out. First 10 years of my life in prison, I was wilding out. I was fighting, stabbing people. You know, I was trying to stay alive. Because at that time, prison was prison. If you was a chump, somebody was going to get you. Somebody was going to run up on you. Somebody was going to make you their wife. And the one thing I said when I got there, I'm not gonna let nobody do shit to me, bro. I'ma survive. And that's what I did. The first 10 years, I put in work. You know, I put in 7 years in solitary confinement. And for those that don't know what solitary confinement is, mean being locked up in your bathroom at home for 7 years, for 24 hours. Once in a while, I got let out to go to the yard for an hour. But mainly, I was locked in 23 hours a day. For 7 years in a cell, no contact visit, no human contact. You know, so it was there that I said, you know what, I'm gonna learn how to read and write. Because when you're in the hole, you ain't got no time. The only thing you can do is read and play air chess. I didn't know how to play chess. So I asked this older gentleman that was next door to me. I never saw his face because we don't come out the cell. You locked in.
Right.
To read a letter that my mom wrote, man, he was like, nah, I'm going to show you how to read. So he began giving me words, you know, and that's how I learned how to read. By the time I came out the hole, bro, I knew how to read, write, fight, stab, you know. I always say the worst thing that the prison system could do for me at that time was allow me to learn how to read. Because when you had me blinded and disfocused, I was doing everything, you know, but trying to come home. The minute I learned how to read and write, I saw my freedom. Because now I can fight my case. Now I can get in court. You know, I damn near became a lawyer when I learned how to read and write.
That's what's up. I'm not going to lie, Ed. The reason why I'm smiling is because you remind me of somebody. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's Black History Month. And as for somebody that was, you know what I'm saying, researching Malcolm X, and he spent, I'm not sure, but he had time where he was incarcerated, right? I'm pretty sure it was for a robbery or something like he did, right? And while the time that he was in prison for, he took advantage of the opportunity. He also wasn't the best reader or knew how to write. He couldn't write in a straight line, but he literally took a dictionary and he wrote every single fucking word, about a million words in that dictionary. And by the end of it, he knew how to read, he knew how to write. He was reading all these books, and that's what made Malcolm X Malcolm X.
Well, you know, Malcolm X was part of my growth and development because I grew up in a household where we practiced the Nation of Islam. So, you know, Malcolm X was always around. a big inspiration in my life. When I learned how to read and write, I read his autobiography like 5 times.
That's dope.
So how do you feel about that? Was that the first time somebody ever compared you to Malcolm X?
Yeah, I just feel good, bro. But nah, you know, he's way doper than me, bro.
No, you can't.
He's an inspiration in my life, though, and in the life of many of the brothers and sisters inside the joint. But nah, I wouldn't make that comparison myself. I still got savage ways.
Him too. You saw some of the shit he was doing. I prefer him over MLK. I'm not gonna lie. A lot of people wouldn't agree with that, but
I mean, hell yeah, but you know.
MLK, bro. MLK just had the.
I'm the dream, bro.
Not over. Yo, talk your shit. Bro. Talk your shit.
You know, a lot of people laugh when I say that, right? But I really mean that, bro, because when I was in prison, bro, I used to dream. I used to dream about being free, bro. I used to dream about walking down the street, being able to go to the store, being able to just use a bathroom, bro, without having another motherfucker standing there looking. Being able to just watch TV, though. Yeah. You know, being able to just talk to some young people without being censored. I used to dream about this shit, bro. And people used to laugh at me. I used to tell people, yo, I'm going home. Because I used to dream this stuff, bro. And people laugh, bro. But look what we had today.
No bullshit. Exactly.
I'm on the Dream Podcast. Imagine that.
How did you keep yourself mentally stable during your time of incarceration? Because we see a lot of people, especially somebody who's facing life, that's as you said, death row and a life sentence are the same thing because you're dying in prison. How does somebody like yourself, how do you even find the strength to even keep pushing through every day? Because we see it happens all the time in prison. Motherfucker take their own life. Some people take their own life and it's not even life sentences. So what is keeping you, what is motivating you, keeping you pushing forward?
The dream, bro. The dream I just spoke about. Like, being able to imagine being somewhere, right? And mentally getting out of prison. When I learned how to read, when I learned that education was the key for me to get out of prison, I was out of prison mentally, bro. Like, a lot of people were like, damn, you don't act like you're serving life. Because I never saw myself dying in prison. I never saw myself as being a lifer in prison. I saw myself as someone that was just there for the moment. I just didn't have a release date. I just didn't have a release date. So everything I did after I came out of solitary confinement was to obtain a release date. That's what I was doing. I went and got my GED. I went and got my associate's degree. I went and got my bachelor's degree. I created programs. I created scholarships. I used to talk to people on different radio shows. You know, I used to do donation drives to buy people clothes, turkeys. You know, I was living my life in prison like I was out here doing the same thing. And people used to be like, you're wasting your time. And I'm like, okay, cool. Let me waste my time. But on November 20th, 2017, I was the only lifer in the United States of America that walked out of prison. The only lifer.
That's deep.
Making fucking history.
No bullshit.
And I'm just, man, it's just stories like this. It's just a fucking miracle. Because it's just fucking crazy. Because when I was doing my research on you, like, I saw the whole interview. When they had you on the news station and shit like that, and just seeing you and just you explaining your stories to these people, it's just like, I don't feel like they truly understand.
They don't. Listen, bro. In 2020, I walked away from a $1 million movie deal. A fucking check, $1 million, walked away. I could have taken home $1 million that day. But you know why I walked away, bro? Because this isn't about money, bro. This is about showing people in my community that look like me. They look like my sons. They look like my daughters. They look like my brothers and cousins, right? That it's all right to fall. It's just how you bounce back, bro. Mm-hmm. It's all right to fall. We all fuck up in life, right? And even though I went to prison for something I didn't do, bro, I still take ownership of where I was in life because I put myself in positions that led me to be arrested for something I ain't do. So when I do interviews, man, I always tell people, yeah, I was that, but look where I'm at today. Look where I'm at today, bro. You know, I want anybody out there, name me another person that's been incarcerated that's done 2 TED Talks. That won the equivalent of an Oscar, the IDA Award. That is like the equivalent of an Oscar for podcasts. That won a Pulitzer Prize, which is the highest award you could get in journalism. White people become journalists as babies to win that award. Yet, here I come, somebody that went to prison at the age of 17 with an IQ of 56, with no reading or writing ability, walking away with the highest award in journalism. Only in motherfucking America that happens, bro. Seriously. So I know if I could do it, and I went through all this trauma, incarceration, losing my mother in prison, losing my grandmother, losing my uncles, sister, niece. I tell people when I went to prison, I had a whole family. When I came out, I had nobody. They all died. That's what happened when you go to prison. But yet, I'm making history. So when somebody say to somebody to come home from prison, you ain't never gonna be nothing. All you gotta do is say, "Swah, I did it." And I got one of them unique names that you can't even forget that name. You can't even forget that name because this is my birth certificate. You feel me? When you say "Swah, I did it," if you Google it, it's gonna show you Pulitzer Prize Award winner, right? So what I'm saying, if I could do it, you could do it. There's no fucking excuses not to be successful out here, bro. At all. No one. You know, and second, I would never allow white media to tell my narrative. Not when we got all this here. The problem that we got is that people in the community rather hear that white stories than our stories. We changing that. Because when people hear that you have a Pulitzer Prize Award, they all ears. That's worth more than the $1 million I walked away from.
Talk heavy.
A lot of people want, it's just.
Nah, I want to speak on something, bro. He said he was in high school, and like I heard, like, imagine going to jail at 17. Like, imagine getting locked for, by the way, for a crime you didn't even commit, bro. Like right now, bro, like at our age, bro. I can't imagine it, bro.
It happens all the time in America when it comes to blacks and Latinos, bro. And nobody wanna speak about it because we think that, I'm too ashamed to tell people I went to jail. Nah, I carry that shit like a bag of honor, bro. Mm. You know why? Watch you know that. Why? Because ain't none of them out there, nobody. Nobody could tell me about prisons. Nobody could tell my story. You can't tell me about the pain of losing a parent while you're in prison. I live all that and survive. When my mother died, I ain't even shed a tear because I would not give my jailers or other motherfuckers in prison the satisfaction of seeing Swag Gonzalez cry. Never shed a tear. Normal death. I mean, I was hurt inside because I knew that one day I was going to come home and visit her gravesite. Like I said, I never carried myself as a lifer out there.
And you finally did get outside and you did you visited your mom. Were you able to finally just
That's when I shed my tears. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That shit tragic, bro.
It's deep, man, but it's a lesson learned, man, that the streets don't lead to nowhere but incarceration and death, bro. I mean, we might think that, you know, yeah, we built for this shit. Man, we ain't built for this, man. You know how many dudes, gangsters, bro, I used to see cry? You know how many dudes I seen, gangsters, hang themselves, cut themselves, commit suicide because they can't take the pressure of being in prison? I know for a fact that half of these dudes don't think they could do time now. Because now jails are locked down. You doing time now. Back then, you know, we could cover up the guards, get what we want, have sex with the guard. Today, you locked in. 23-1 state prisons. In a bathroom. Taking order from a goddamn white dude that's probably 19, 20 years old. Motherfucker that can't even look at you right in the eyes out here is telling you, strip, nigga. Bend over. Spread them. Cough. Do that again. I want to see it again. Just to humiliate you. And you got to do it. Because if you don't, you end up in the hole. And most of these gangsters do it. That's how real it gets in there.
Let me say this. He's just a different breed. I'm not gonna lie. And it's, talking to you, I really understand how strong you is mentally as a person. I don't know, bro. Like, this shit really crazy for real. And it's just like, I'm so blessed to be in the presence of you and to hear your story. It's just because a lot of people, because I don't think I could go through a situation like that and end up like how you did. I don't think so. I just
came out unscathed, basically.
You know what I'm saying? But I know, even still, you know what I'm saying, coming out and stuff, how are you still adjusting to society?
Hell yeah, bro. Every day. I've been home 6 years, going on 7 years in November. Bro, I still can't fucking sleep. I'm up all night. I'm up all night, bro. I go home, sleep for 2 hours, I'm up all night. That's how I'm able to do a lot of my work. Seriously, that's how I'm able to do that kind of work. I'm up all night, bro. That's one of the effect of being in prison. Learning this computer stuff, you know, I'm still learning the computer. I know how to do what I'm supposed to do to get my projects on, but I don't do no magic with them. You know, I know how to get on, record, edit. I know how to do that because I learned. But everything else, I got to get somebody to help me. Might be a 10-year-old kid, you know, showing me how to work the phone and shit like that. I've been home 6 years and I just got an iPhone.
Dude, don't feel bad. I mean, most old heads like that too. I ain't gonna lie.
No, but that goes to show that when you're in prison, right, you stop growing at the age you go in. You stop growing. Even though you get old in age, but you stop maturing. Your growth stops because you're away from everything.
Yeah.
Stop. So when you come home, when I went to prison, there was no cell phones. That we couldn't get access to computers, bro. I come home, you got computers, cell phones, internet. You know, I remember going to the dollar store from the halfway house, and I got a food stamp card they gave me. And I'm just looking at the machine, and the machine is like, you can now swipe. And I was like, what the fuck this machine is talking to me? And I'm getting frustrated, right? Because I don't know what to do. And nobody want to help. Everybody just walk around you like you crazy. So finally, I asked the lady behind the cash, the register, like, yo, can you help me? And she gave me like a fucking attitude. Like, you don't know how to do this? Where you been at? Under a rock? I said, yes. Under the motherfucking rock. You know, like, it's shit like that, man, that the normal person out here don't think about. But try spending 30 years, 40 years, and 31 years is a long time. But I was next door to somebody, my old head, Joe Legan, who spent 69 years in prison. 69 years in prison. That's as old as your mother, your grandmother probably, and somebody else in there that we probably don't even know. He went to jail in 1952. Try that.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And then when you came out, it's like you traveled into the fucking future for real. It's like you coming out to a whole different world.
It's exactly what it is, man.
How did you rap when you first got introduced to social media? What was your first thoughts?
The fuck is this? What the heck is this? Like, and then you got little kids teaching you about social media. That's the bad part. Little kids don't know where you come from. Mm. You know, I got a little kid, 7-year-old, teaching me how to create a Facebook account. What are you, stupid? Oh, man. You know, and you be like, damn. But they don't know. So you just got to go along with the flow, pay them the little $10. They're hustling you up. You know who you are. I'm coming for my $10.
Nah. That's crazy.
But, okay. So when I was looking at the news, the video, right? They threw some pictures on there. I'm not going to lie. So I think you might need to go on a diet.
I do. I do. Nah, I mean, listen, bro. You spent 31 years in jail eating oodles and noodles. Whatever the fuck you get out, if you get out, you gonna eat everything out here, bro. Everything. Every dude that you know, they done more than 20 years in jail, they come out all fit. Next thing you know, bro, you be like, dang, that motherfucker got big. Yeah. Bro, I came home, bro. I ain't ate meat for 20 years in prison.
Time.
20 years. I came home, the first motherfucking thing I ate was a steak, bro. And that shit was good, too.
Yeah, nigga had to treat himself.
That shit was good. Between eating, sex, done, bro.
I know, bro, imagine going no buns for 31 years, bro.
That is crazy.
Yeah, imagine that. Beating your meat for 31 years, bro.
No bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not...
Nah, bro, not...
I ain't gonna lie, it is.
I mean, but like I said, I'm not gonna get into detail, but, you know, this... You know, you might get a shot every year, you know, if you got the money to corrupt one of the guards, you know, that you get a shot, but that's not even... It's not even enough, bro. That's not even enough. I remember one time, man, I paid a guard... To get a shot, man. The whole week I was planning.
Wait, can you explain what a shot?
Bro, a shot. The whole week I planned this stuff. Now I'm gonna get some pussy. What the? Man, yo, listen. Three strokes. That was it. Three strokes. So... And that shit felt like an hour, bro. I spent $100, bro, for less than 3 minutes, bro.
Nah, I feel like it's time to get grimy, bro.
That's how it goes, bro. I mean, you can sit here now and say, I can go for an hour. Yeah, you fuck every day, man. Try not fucking for 10 years and then get a shot for the first time. Done.
You're right.
Yeah.
I ain't
gonna
argue that.
Man, listen, man. Shout out to the corrupt CEOs out there that made life easy for some of us, man.
Shout out y'all, man.
I don't judge you.
But when... Let's talk about just some of the people that you see while being incarcerated. How would you describe some of these people? What was some of the craziest things you've seen?
Some of the craziest stuff I seen, bro, was they had this thing called the sweatshop where they make uniforms. It's like a sweatshop, bro. Like 300 dudes working there. And people get paid like 42 cents an hour. That's a lot of money in the prison system. So, and all you did was create clothes for the inmates and clothes for the guards. And I seen this gay guy and his man going at it. So his man went and approached the guy that the gay guy was talking to. Now be mindful, man. Everybody got shades. The sister's about this big, bro. And everybody. That dude just turned around, bro, and stabbed that boy like 18 times with the shades. Yes. Yes. Like nothing ever happened. Everybody just kept walking, minding their business. And then another time, in the same spot, little Spanish guy, 5'1". He was in the line ready to go back to the blocks for commissary. Somebody in the back of the line threw a laundry bag where you put the commissary at and touched him on his backside. He turned around, and behind him was this dude that was known in the jail as a booty bandit.
Right? Because you swing with a booty bandit. No,
listen. I'm listening.
The guy was just standing there. He wasn't the guy that threw the laundry bag. But he was just standing there like, guy left, came back the next morning, drunk coffee with the same guy, like and nothing ever happened, turned around and killed him, stabbed him to death. True story, Google it.
Damn.
Yeah.
Don't be a booty bandit, guys.
No, it's not even about being a booty bandit, bro. When you put in a prison with adults, you got to act like a man, bro. Can't be acting with that childish shit. It gets you killed. It gets you killed. I mean, you could be playing with somebody, and somebody just take that shit serious. Now you put in a position, bro, where you got to kill somebody. I also seen people go in with 2 years, 3 years, end up serving life. They get put in situations where now you gotta act, bro. And everything in prison is resolved with violence. Everything. You owe me a pack of cigarettes, you don't pay me, I'ma stab you. You owe me a oodles, noodles, a pack of soup, 13 cents could cost you your life, bro.
Should get down over there, bro.
Nah, like, I'm just so shocked because it's just like, most people wouldn't know what to do being put in that situation. And it's just like, how frequently are you seeing violence?
Every day,
bro.
Well,
that's gotta be every day, bro.
Every day, bro. Just imagine living in a block with 500 people, bro. One block, 500 people. That's 500 different personalities. Or just imagine you got beef from somebody from West Philly, right? Mm-hmm. But you go to the jail and you end up being that same person's cellmate.
Shit, tragic.
Nobody wins, bro. When blacks and Latinos get put in prison for life, nobody wins.
Okay. My fight. Could you describe and talk about, first of all, how did you get introduced to Maria?
She came into the prison and, let me rewind that. Some old head, I came out the hole, old head gave me a radio. And it only had like 3 stations. And one of the stations used to play Hush Show, and I heard her voice. I was like, damn, they got a Latina on the radio? And I used to hear her every day, like at 3:00. So my homie, he was a school tutor, and he graduated like a bunch of people that year. So they told him, you could bring a guest speaker. So I convinced him, like, yo, bro, you need to bring her. So they got her up there. When she came in the jail, it was like this little short lady, real short. I was like, damn. her voice sounds bigger than that. Mm. So I told her, yeah, I'm from New York, because she's from New York, and we stay in touch. Next thing you know, she started sending me books, books I couldn't even read, bro. And that's how I met her. She came into the prison to talk.
Okay. And could you talk about the impact that she had on your life?
Oh, come on, man. That's my angel, bro. Because by that time, you know, I had a bunch of years in, and, you know, when you got life, people start dying off in your life and out here. You know, homies start fading off, girlfriends start messing with your other boy. You know, next thing you know, you by yourself doing time, and that's how I was. So she became my outside source. Even though I was her source inside, she became my outside source. She became the one that I used to call and find things out, what's going on around the world, what's going on in communities. And so to me, she was like an angel, bro. She was like an angel.
Who is Maria?
Maria Hinojosa is a journalist, world-class journalist. She interviewed presidents, Supreme Court justices. But she's like a different type of journalist. You know, when she's your friend, she's your friend. You know, no matter what people say.
That's dope.
So we managed to remain friends to this day.
What made you get into podcasting?
Maria, I'm around journalists. I've been around this shit forever, bro. Before it became podcast, I used to call different radio stations from the jail and just get my point of view on different things. You know, then it became podcasts, and I was like, oh, when I get out, I want to do that. Then when I got out, I was working at a radio station, and I learned how to work the system. You know, then the pandemic hit. I was like, shit. You know, and that was probably the best thing that happened in my life, because it gave me a chance to record my whole life, which ultimately won the Pulitzer Prize.
That's dope, man.
Nah, for sure, for sure. And being out now, do you truly feel like you're free?
Oh, never free, bro. I'm on parole for life, bro. Never free. Parole is when you have to report to another asshole every month, when you got to pay supervision fees. Where if I look at somebody wrong, they can say, I'm scared of him. It's a violation of parole. I could go back in for life.
But you're innocent.
But you're innocent, yes. That's what that is.
Just fucked up, man.
It's another way of keeping blacks and Latinos enslaved.
What was the first thing that you did when you came up?
On day one?
Day one. What's the first thing that you thought of doing?
No, the first thing I did on day one was spoken in school. I went from jail straight to a school, prison clothes and all, and spoke to a bunch of kids in school. Before I came home, I had a plan. Like, I knew what I was going to do on day one, day two, day three, day four. I had a plan.
Walk us through.
Had a plan. You know, my first month home was like speaking, speaking engagement, traveling. 2 weeks out of prison, I'm back in prison visiting Robert Williams, better known as Mick Mills in Chester. You know, because the superintendent called me, yo, come talk to him. He needed advice or whatever. So went back to the prison. That's 2 weeks after I came home. So that showed you the type of work I was doing inside the prison. That the superintendent called me back, like, go down here and talk to this brother. Feel me? Mm. So my whole time home for the first month was speaking engagement, traveling, working, getting certification. I got my clearance from the state legislature because I was working for a state rep. Then I became director of a program. 6 months home, but I'm 30 days home. I became director of a program. From there, I started working at the 25th Police District as a case manager. And from there, it just kept on. It took me about 2 months, man, to find the right girl to get laid, bro. Because I'm in a halfway house. You can't bring nobody in a halfway house.
Yeah.
I'm on a curfew, so everything I had to do was from 6 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night.
Seven?
I had to fit all that in there. And sex wasn't in there, bro.
How did you end up at CCP? What's the story behind that?
Bro, I spoke at CCP in 2014. We did a what they call call out from in jail, simulcast, and we did it here. And I told people at CCP, when I go home, I'm gonna get a job with y'all down there. You gotta talk this shit into a system, bro. You gotta talk it into his system, bro. Can't take no for an answer. You gotta talk it into his system and go do it.
Mm. Really manifested it.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie, you talked about the first things you did when you got out and you had it all mapped out, but I know for sure, like, the first moments when you walk into that facility, into that prison, like, your hair's just scattered everywhere. Like, can you walk us through that, like, the first moments?
Man, the first day in any prison, bro, is the worst, bro. Because you going in and you don't know if you're going to come back out. You really don't. You could be the best person out here, good guy. But when you get into that prison, man, that shit transformed you into a monster, bro. Like, into a monster, bro. Like, I was transformed. Like, I'm like... kill one of these motherfuckers, say anything to me. That was my mentality.
Like, you had that mentality just going up.
Nah, I developed that mentality the minute I saw that 40-foot wall.
So who?
I was like, nah, I'm not gonna let nobody take advantage of me. I'm not gonna be nobody's bitch. I don't care what it is. If you take a pack of oodles and noodles, which at the time was 13 cents, I was gonna kill you, bro. And people knew that. Because once you put in work one or two or three times, they leave you the fuck. People leave you alone. They'll be like, yo, if you ain't trying to get hurt or if you ain't trying to kill this boy, it's best to leave him alone.
Let me speak on that, too, because you mentioned that phrase, putting in the work. Can you really go into depth about what that is, putting in work?
Putting in work means stabbing somebody, what they call shanking somebody. Putting somebody in the hospital, you know, making sure that the rest of the population know you ain't the one to be messed with. That's putting in work. I mean, you got dudes that could box real good. You know, I ain't fighting nobody, bro. Fighting no motherfucking boxer, bro. You ain't gonna beat me the hell up.
Right.
You know, because even though I think I could fight, you never gonna be a trained boxer, bro. So I'm like, all right, cool, let's make this shit fair. You know, my first time I was forced to put work in. I remember, bro, I was in Camp Hill, commissary, and we walking out. We had to walk down in a straight line. Fucking old head, man, just bumped up behind me, bro. Just put his whole fucking dick on my back, bro.
Yeah, how old were you?
I was 18, bro. And I just looked at him and I'm like, yo, bro, you serious? And the guards that keep the line moving, or nobody will go to commissary. So now you either got to decide, as I'm willing to fight like 50 motherfuckers, they go into commissary, or just this one dude that just violated me, right? I said, you know what? I see you on the block. So I went to commissary that day, and I bought some straight razors. Went back to the cell, got a cigarette lighter, melt the razors on a toothbrush, and I waited till they opened the doors for child. When they opened, every tier get opened one tier at a time. When they opened my door, I went, walked down to his cell, and I stood in front of his door. And you could see the lust in this nigga's eye, like he was gonna get some ass or something, bro. When they hit his doors, I went in and locked his door. Only with that door open is somebody let the guard know up front what's going on. Man, I went in there and cut that nigga 32 times. 32 times. And I'm still stuck in this cell. Took the motherfucking toothbrush that I had, flushed it on the toilet. No evidence, no motherfucking case.
And niggas not going rat neither.
Oh, yeah, they rat. They gave me a charge for that, bro.
Oh, yeah?
But I beat it because the guards was like, can find no weapon. I was like, man, I was just trying to help this dude. Just trying to help this dude.
I'm just... No.
Yes, sir.
Nah, that's crazy. And you was 18.
18.
You imagine doing that at 18, man.
Now you have to do that, because if you let somebody violate you, put their motherfucking private part on your back or in any anywhere in your body, bro, that's a sign that they're trying to fuck you, bro. That's what that means. Because the next time they're going to violate you, it's probably going to be in the shower. Mm. Or they're probably going to try to run up in your cell. So a statement had to be made.
So.
Yep.
We see, well, growing up, a lot. It's, you know, how in prison or whatever, like the shower and all that, they make a lot of jokes.
How, basically, how prison is portrayed when you're not when on the outside.
Yeah,
that's movies, man. It's movies. Don't believe the hype.
Mm. I'm gonna ask you know what I'm about to say. Is dropping the soap true? Like, is that shit true?
No.
All right, okay.
No. Niggas in prison don't get turned out, bro. If you gay, you gay, bro.
That's what I'm saying.
Motherfuckers will try you, bro. People will try you, right? When I mean try, they will try you. See if you bent. But for the most part, most people that engage in homosexual activities in prison are people that had that shit in them
on the outside, before they came to prison. I'm trying to tell niggas,
and
bro.
You gotta remember, at the time I went to prison, being gay wasn't cool. Now it's, you know, it's cool. Mm. Shout out to my LGBT community out there. Thanks for y'all support. Make sure y'all tune in to the Dream Team podcast.
Hell yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, if you gay, you gay, bro. You know, you just don't go in there and say, it's no five people coming in there to rape you.
Bro, I ain't gonna lie, because it's like...
That's movies, bro.
Yeah, watching the Boondocks.
Nah, that's movies, man. Betrayed, like, yeah. Now, what you have is what I described. You might have an old head that look at you, observe you, and think you soft. Come at you. Like, what you need, young boy? You might say, man, I need some compensation. My people send me some money. Now you in debt, bro. Mm. Now you got to pay that dude. When that dude come back and try to get paid, how you going to pay him? And if you a soft-ass dude, you know what's that. You going to be like, all right, young boy, let me see you in my cell. Yeah. You got to remember them old heads in prison, man. They've been in jail at the time when I went in 20, 30 years. They working out. You know, they got the boxing game packed down to the sign. Hit you with a two-piece, you out. Unexpected, you out. So that's why I be telling these young boys, man, learn what you're getting yourself into before you get there. Before you get there. But not everybody in prison is gay, bro. Not everybody in prison is into that. It's only a certain type of dudes, and you got to deal with that.
No.
But if they know you put in work, nobody gonna try you, bro. Nobody gonna try you. Guarantee you.
So, like, you said, like, this shit not like the movies and all that. But, like, you know, it's prison at the end of the day is a lot of personalities and stuff. It's gonna be, like, that one soft boy that everybody think they could pick on and stuff.
Soft, you gotta get some heart and stab somebody, bro.
Yeah, you ever seen, like...
You got two choices, bro. When I went to prison, they had a sign up in the door, bro. It was fight, fuck, or hang yourself.
You dead ass?
Dead ass. Right? So guess what? I seen some soft dudes turn into killers, bro.
Yeah.
And I seen some killing dudes out here turn soft for shit in prison. See, because you ain't got no guns. And poking somebody, it's a personal thing, bro.
Yeah, no, I don't feel like people really understand
that.
That's
up close and personal, yeah. Bro. Everybody ain't built like that, bro. Everybody's not built to stick a piece of metal in somebody, bro.
I feel like that's worse than getting shot.
That's what I'm saying. That's why niggas be making fun of the UK niggas. I be like, bro, them niggas grimy, bro.
Bro, it is. So, you know, so that's what young boys out here need to understand. Like, there's no guns in prisons, man. And there's no fair fights. The boxing in prison been banned for years. So there's no fair fight.
These niggas, especially in Philly, they don't give a fuck. We got a bunch of cry shouts. It's even worse now. These niggas don't care about what they do. And I wish all of them could hear your story, because I feel like it would definitely change. I don't even know if it would. Nah, I don't think so.
That shit going in one ear out the other, bro. I'm going to keep it being.
They're going to have to find out the hard way. And it's sad that they have to. It's sad that you can't just listen to somebody's experience and then just change your life.
Yeah.
You have to learn the hard way. You have to go to prison. And sometimes that doesn't even work.
Well, guess what? You got two choices, bro. You can listen to the Dream Team podcast, get the story on all your major platforms. Or you can go to jail and get that prison number and find out for yourself.
No bullshit. I suggest the first option.
Me too. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying.
But you talked about how going into prison, how it changed you and it made you into a monster. But who was Suave before
even going? Oh, man, I was a fucking monster, bro. Probably would have been dead in 86. Probably would have been dead. I was involved with drugs, all types of shit, bro. That's why I say, you know, for me, it was like a gift and a curse, bro, because I went to jail and saved my life. Mm. Really saved my life.
Yeah, because, like,
we would have been dead in 1986. For sure. Would have been dead. Somebody probably would have killed me, bro.
Before going in, what were some of the activities that you used to like doing?
No bullshit.
I used to walk around with a 9mm, bro. Wow. Clearing out the corners. That was my job.
So, like, niggas.
What do you mean by cleaning out the corners?
Like, we had a block, and, you know, you had people that just come on the block and want to hang out in the corner. That called the attention of the police for the people that's slinging. So, I'll come by, yo, y'all got to clear the corner. Motherfuckers get tough, pistol whip them. Motherfuckers get too tough, shoot them. Simple as that.
Done.
Now, what was the reason? What made you turn to the streets?
Oh man, the lack of father in the household, poverty. I come from a fucking the 80s, man. Motherfuckers was poor, bro. Fuckers were poor. My mom couldn't afford buying five kids Adidas and Pumas and shit. You had to go hustle, bro. You know, I was tired of eating motherfucking white rice and beans and fried eggs. I said, fuck it, I'm gonna go to the streets. Go get that money. Mm-hmm. Go get that bag. The 80s money was loan money, bro. $100 in the 80s is like the equivalent of $1,000 today.
And what was the age that you really got off the porch, got into the streets?
Man, I was born in the streets, bro. Born in the street because my mom was in the game.
Oh.
My mom was in the game, so, you know, I remember for my 12th birthdays, I told my mom, I said, what you want for your birthday? I said, I want a girl. My mom used to pimp these girls out in this block called Hut's Point.
Oh, no.
They made a documentary about it in New York, The Point. And, you know, lay up with one of them old hookers, bro. So I came out the porch early, bro.
Nigga hopped off the porch as an infant. That shit creep.
I wasn't expecting that. So growing up, where was your father? Or did you ever?
Nah, my mom was a victim of a rape. And me and my twin sister were the products of that. So as far as I'm concerned, any old motherfucker walk by me today could be him.
What the fuck? Hey, fucking yo.
Moment of silence. I ain't even know that, Suave.
I ain't gonna lie, he ain't say all this.
Y'all better listen to the Suave podcast, man. It's there.
So, like,
public information.
You have any, like, thoughts on your father?
Nah, bro. My mom raised me. My mom was my father and mother, bro.
That's dope. Well, not dope, but, like,
my mom was my father and mother.
Do you, Do you feel like as somebody that didn't really have a father also in their life, do you feel like a mother can really make a son into a man?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You need a male figure in your life. You know, when your mother could try, and they do try. So shout out to all the single mothers that try, bro. But at the end of the day, a boy need a male figure in their life. Because what end up happening, man, is what we're seeing today. We got a lot of young boys that come up under the skirt, under the mother's skirt, with a lot of female tendencies. Mm. A lot of female tendencies. You know, and I think that a boy needs to be around a male figure, whether it's an uncle, a grandfather, a father, you know, that's in the life. But you need a male figure in your life. Your mother can't show you how to box, how to fight. I mean, some women try, but it could never happen.
What was the biggest things that you taught yourself that you feel like you should have learned from a father?
How to fight, how to survive, how to protect my sisters, my mom, you know, how to respect a woman. Like, I do not, even to this day, I do not sleep, talk, or will go out with any woman that's intoxicated.
And that's something that you taught, you had to teach yourself.
Yeah, you got to teach that. You can't, you know, you got to know how to be a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know how to, you know, you want to be like your father. If you got a father in your life, you want to model that. You want to be like, damn, that's my papa, strong dude. He might do some nut ass shit sometimes, like, yo, get your ass in the house.
Sometimes.
But overall, he feeds you, he clothes you, make sure you still going to school and all that stuff, if he's in your life. You know, and you want to be like that. You don't want no, nobody want to be with some nigga, man, that just, nah, you want to be like your pop. You know, that's why I said a woman cannot raise a man, a young boy, to be a man.
Hmm.
Okay. Was there any funny stories in prison?
Nah, bro, there's nothing funny about being in prison, bro. I mean, you got some shit that make you laugh, but there's nothing funny, bro. Because I was in a prison where everybody was serving life, bro. So you really never saw a lot of people coming out. You saw them coming in.
Oh, so the type of prison it was just filled with just people who
served life. Lifers. Lifers.
Yeah.
So you saw people come in when they were 19, 20, and now they 40. You know, now they the old heads.
I'm like, okay, I ain't know.
You know, so that's not funny, man. You have funny moments, man, but there's nothing funny about that shit, bro. There's nothing funny knowing that is your death place, bro. That's where it ends, right there. And you just walking around waiting for that day. Fuck no, bro.
Bro, that's so ass.
If you could give advice to somebody who's, I guess, the same age when you went into prison, who was going through the same thing, what would it be?
Mind your fucking business. Appeal your case. Right? Because we are not built for prison. We wasn't born to be in prison. Our ancestors, bro, sacrifice their life so we could have a better way of living. Mm. Period. And we not dumb. So if you don't want to go through the same experience, bro, go to school. Listen to your mom. Become something better, man. There's more than just being a rapper and a ball player or a drug dealer. Find something you could do, man. Capitalize off that. But trust me, you do not want to spend the rest of your life in a prison cell. It's not funny. Because once you go in, you're not coming out. No matter who died in your family or none of that. You can't go to no funerals, no hospital, but nothing. Your whole life will be in paper. If your people remember to send you a photo. Because they don't even take photos no more. You got to print that shit on paper now. You feel me? That will be your life. After 10 years, nobody out here would know who the fuck you are, bro. Including your family. Because the elders in your family will die, and the kids that you left as baby will grow and don't even know who you are. Mm. Won't even know who you are. I got nephews to death that if they're walking through that door, I don't even know who they are. Never seen them.
Shit, tragic.
So, I know we got a few minutes left, right? But in closing, you know, I just want to tell the young kids out there, follow the Dream Team podcast. Because from time to time, it might be entertaining. But at the end of the day, they're giving you facts. They are giving you facts. Period. Period. You know, because I'm not supposed to be here. I was supposed to die in prison. Like I started the interview, I was on death row. And I beat the fucking system by the grace of God. I don't get a second chance.
Like you said, we got a few more minutes left, and I got two more questions left. So, the first one being, what's Suave's goal? Does Suave have any more goals?
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of things coming up. Big projects. Can't speak about it publicly right now. But,
you got any more life goals? Life goals.
Oh, yeah, of course, bro.
Tell us some. Tell us some.
Like I said, big projects coming down the line.
What can you say? What can you say right now?
Come on, man. Make sure you save that money to go to the movies, all right?
Come on. I like that.
Tour, June, between the North America. Yo, it's on, man.
For sure.
It's on. Like I said, you're never too old, right, to accomplish your dream because there's no dream too big and no dream too small.
No bullshit.
I'm living proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living proof of that. You know, and if you ever have any doubts, Google my name. You will see the whole story. Google it. You know, and I'm not trying to scare nobody because I don't think I can scare anybody. I'm just trying to let you know facts. The decision is yours.
For sure. And then last question being, what are some things that you want to see? If you had the power, what would you change about prison, or just the way how shit is when it comes to somebody being incarcerated?
I would change the way that the United States house juveniles when they get charged as adults. I would never put a 15-year-old in the same prison with a 30-year-old man. That's what I would change. I think that 15-year-old kids could be rehabilitated. I'm living proof of that. No matter what they do.
That's it.
That's dope, man.
That's it. No dream. It's too big. No dream. It's too small. Y'all better support these brothers, man.
Yes, sir. Sure.